Alrighty, it is Wednesday, and you know what that means. It's time for Wrestling Nostalgia. Tonight, we are looking at one of the most anticipated debuts in WWE history, the NWO, consisting of Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, and of course, Hollywood Hulk Hogan, finally making their debut in WWE during the Invasion angle. Let's get it all started right now.
It's time for your weekly fix of wrestling nostalgia when we look at wrestling's past eras from the Attitude Era to the Reality Era.
I'd like to think that maybe this company will be better after Vince McMahon's dead, but the fact is it's going to get taken over by his idiotic daughter and his doofus son-in-law and the rest of his stupid family.
To today. Here on the WWE Podcast.
All right, everybody, welcome to the WWE Podcast. It's time for some wrestling nostalgia. It's time to have a little fun on this January 6th, 2021. A day that many of us may not forget. Just an insane day in the news or in politics and everything else. And, you know, I want to be here and I'm going to be here to take your mind off of it. But I, you know, it's hard not to address right up front. And, you know, maybe my other co-hosts may as well. And this is certainly not a political podcast, but man, this is insanity. I'm not going to give you my political leanings here because it's, you know, whether I'm pro-Trump, anti-Trump, it's damned if I do, damned if I don't, and I don't want to turn any of our listeners off. I'm not being stupid about it, all right? I mean, I'm not going to give away my thoughts on politics in terms of my leanings, Democrat, Republican, whatever, but I will just say this objectively, that it is a day that I think we're going to look back on, and I think we'll look back on it as a day for change. As a day that maybe frustrations came to a boil. And, you know, a lot of people are comparing it to the Black Lives Matter riots and all that. And I guess I'll stop there because there's lots of comparisons and lots of things I could say. But again, we're here to talk wrestling. We're here to talk wrestling. And that's what we're here to do because we are here to talk about things that don't really matter, but they really matter to take your mind off of things and get you out of that stressful life, maybe, or that stressful scenario, and just dive in and enjoy wrestling. And tonight, we're looking back at an angle that began in 2002. Actually, at No Way Out 2002, when WWE was still known as WWF. That's how long ago we're talking. 19 years ago, nearly. And it was done via, as they were labeled, a poison. And Vince labeled them a poison that he was going to inject into WWE. I remember the SmackDown, I believe it was SmackDown before he announced to what he was doing. Throughout the show, he was shown backstage, sitting in a chair, looking in the mirror, talking to himself. And it was just kind of like rambling and looked like he was out of his mind. And at the end of the show, he finally reveals that he's going to inject a poison into WWE. It's going to be the NWO. And that's how we were privy to NWO finally making their way to WWE. And of course, we're going to get to the audio of their making their debut and the subsequent storylines, that followed, which are significant, but somewhat disappointing in other ways. We're going to get to that. But first, guys, thank you for joining me here on the WWE Podcast. And as we get closer and closer to the Royal Rumble, I am interested in asking you guys, I'm interested in if you want to know, if you'd like to watch or live stream with me the Royal Rumble pay-per-view, where we can watch it live together. Is that something you'd be interested in? And I could do it via YouTube. Just create like a private link and let me know, because I'm very interested to hear if you'd like to do that, where I could just pop up my laptop. We could watch it together. As the show goes on, you'd see my reactions in real time. You know, no safety net. It's live as live can be, but interesting. Just a little thought, especially for my members on Patreon. We're also getting an ad-free experience for every single show. So if you don't like the ads, that's your place to go. Patreon.com/WWE podcast, because you get everything ad free, everything. So just a little plug there for that. And my website is just about back up to normal. We're working on it. I really, really screwed it up. I mean, that was my bad. I had to hire my tech guy back and have him fix it up. So that should be a little bit better now, if you're interested in that. Follow us on Twitter at @wrestling_audio. And email us at realwwepodcast@gmail.com with comments, questions, suggestions, complaints, whatever. That's the place to drop your thoughts. Also, tomorrow, we're going to be doing a NXT review with Zach Smith, who's returning. And we also are having our mailbag, which I may be dropping at the same time I drop this show. So don't be surprised if you see, obviously, this show and that one with the mailbag. A lot of last-minute questions came in. So we're going to be, of course, addressing those and answering them live on the air. Very excited to see some, hear some old voices and some new ones that look like they're there. So, all right, well, let's get into the NWO, guys, the New World Order. Now, admittedly, I was not really a WCW Nitro watcher. I knew who the NWO were. I remember seeing them just as much as I would see a DX shirt at the time. They were extremely popular, as they should have been. One of the most, if not the most successful group of all time, you could argue, in all of professional wrestling. There's an argument to be made there. However, they did get watered down at the end. It felt like everyone joined the NWO, which made it less special. That is, again, I've seen clips and interviews. That's how I know this information. And it, again, WCW never really drew me to their product. They just didn't. Their show wasn't as clean. The announcers weren't as good as Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler. Your characters weren't as believable. It just didn't have the WWE flavor during the Attitude Era. So it wasn't my cup of tea in WCW. And again, that said, doesn't mean I didn't know who the stars were. Certainly, even if you didn't watch WCW, you know who the hell Hulk Hogan is. You know who Kevin Nash and Scott Hall are more often or more likely than not. So you knew who the NWO were, the infamous spray painting of the back on of the MWO letters and the t-shirts and Hulk Hogan turning heel at Bash at the Beach in 96, all of that. I mean, you can't miss it. It's impossible to avoid. So that was what was going on at the time, obviously, with NWO and WCW being the biggest group. And then once WCW was bought by Vince McMahon, I believe it was in March of 2001, WWE was pressured by fans, or really fans were asking, when are we going to see the big names, right? Like, where's Hogan? Where's Flair? Where's Sting? You know, where's Nash and Hall and Goldberg? Like, and I agree. I remember saying the same thing, and we got like the B team in the first invasion angle. We got the B team. I mean, we had Diamond Dallas Page, a fairly big name in WCW. I mean, we had Rhino, I remember, from ECW. I mean, we had some names in there that were somewhat big. The Dudley Boys coming from ECW, of course. I mean, but we didn't ever really get those big, big top-tier names that you really should have before you do an angle like this or find a way to make it work. Now, you may be asking, well, why the hell didn't they bring them in? Simple answer, really, for most of them, is that their contracts with Time Warner were still going on, and they had guaranteed payouts. Guaranteed. So they weren't going anywhere. They were going to sit at home, collect their checks from Ted Turner, and then once they were alleviated of those contracts, WWE immediately contacted them. So there was that period where they couldn't bring them in because of the contracts that they were under with WCW, even though they were currently bought by WWE. The problem was that, and really, I understand why. Why would they work when they have guaranteed money coming in? Totally understand that. So that was the reasoning for not bringing in the top guys. And of course, it took Goldberg a couple of years to get there. He didn't debut until 2003, I believe, to face The Rock. And Sting took what? How many years to get to WWE? Like 13 years to get to WWE after WCW was purchased by WWF at the time? You know, only to debut and have Triple H beat you at WrestleMania. It's so ridiculous. One of the most awful bookings of all time was having Sting lose to Triple H. And then, didn't he like shake his hand after the match or something? I mean, maybe I'll do a nostalgia on that, even though I didn't enjoy the match because it was a disaster in and of itself, where the NWO actually did appear and they tried to aid Sting in that match. Yet in WCW, they were mortal enemies. So explain to me why there's such an allegiance there. I don't know. With a company that doesn't even exist anymore. And then DX comes out. It was a disaster of a match. It was nice. It was interesting to see all the guys in the ring at the same time. Some of them could barely move at the time. And Triple H using a sledgehammer on Sting. And then Sting shakes his hand after the match. It was a mess. And Triple H going over was the worst part. So if you haven't seen Sting versus Triple H at WrestleMania, go check it out. I believe it was the one that they had, like, it was the middle of the day, which was weird. Was that WrestleMania 31? I think it was WrestleMania 31. Where, because I remember Randy Orton and Seth Rollins having a match, and it was, like, still daylight. And I'm like, how are they going to do the Undertaker's entrance if it's still daylight? And it was a very, very strange WrestleMania. I never want WrestleMania in the sun again. Please, do not ever put it in the sunshine. Keep it in a stadium that is on the East Coast, so we don't have to deal with the sunlight. It just is weird. I don't know. Anyway, little nitpick. But nonetheless, okay, here we go. NWO was the poison that Vince was going to inject into his own creation. Because at the time, guys, the story was that Ric Flair, who had also recently just come in, was partial owner. He had a 50% stake in WWF. And Flair, or McMahon, promised that he would not bring in the NWO if Flair agreed to sell his 50% stake back to Vince. Of course, Flair refused to sell, which led Vince McMahon to reveal several vignettes over the next several weeks, with Hogan, Hall, Nash, and three who were the original three members of the NWO, and they appeared as McMahon's hired guns. So yeah, I'm reading it a little bit, but I wanted to make sure I got the full story. Now it's all coming back to me in terms of the setup. I want to give you guys the setup too. So they were indeed portrayed as McMahon's hired guns. They were the ones that wanted to destroy. They were the ones that were brought in to destroy his own creation. It was kind of like Vince saying, if you can't have it, nobody can, right? Or if I can't have all of the company, control of all of the company, nobody's going to have control of the company at all because the company won't exist. Boy, 19 years later, it's amazing the logic holes that are in this story. So many holes that don't make sense, didn't get filled, were just ignored. But again, in 2002, I was 17 years old, not giving a damn, just watching Stunners and beer and Rock Bottoms, and I didn't care. So I guess the 35-year-old brain in me is having trouble. I see like red flag. It's like my brain is like, alert, alert, alert. This makes no sense, right? But okay, we're talking about an angle from 19 years ago. And this was, again, many people wanted to see these guys in there in WWE. It came a year too late with the invasion angle already happening a year earlier with the invasion pay-per-view and Austin turning heel again, turning on Team WWF to lead the alliance, which was WCW and ECW aligned, and Stephanie McMahon and Shane McMahon were also heading up them individually, but Austin was the leader. And really doubling down on the heel turn to see if they can make it work. And it didn't. It just didn't. I mean, the heel turn for Austin never worked. I've talked about that many times in the show. However, the what thing did come out of this whole angle. You know, those what chants? Yeah, almost 20-year-old what chants? Boy, oof, that sunk deep. 19. That the what thing came from this invasion angle and Austin leading the alliance. So, all right, well, here's where it leads up to, okay? It led up to, as I talked about earlier, this all came to a head at the No Way Out pay-per-view on February 17th, 2002. It was in Milwaukee, Wisconsin at the Bradley Center. The attendance was 15,291. Ugh, boy, it'd be great to have that many people back. So let me also break down the match card here, because I think it's important. I know that this isn't what it's about, but I want to give you a sign of the times, so to speak. So there was only 8 matches. DDP versus Big Boss Man. DDP won. It was for the European Championship in 3 minutes. Wow, the European Championship. The APA, which were Bradshaw and Farouk, were in a tag team turmoil match and were last eliminated by Billy and Chuck in 16 minutes and 38 seconds. Remember Billy and Chuck? The implied gay tag team that eventually, I guess, weren't gay, or I don't know. It turned out that they actually weren't or something. It was very bizarre and it was weird. And just really downright uncomfortable. I mean, I don't know. It was supposed to be the comedy, but imply they're gay, but eventually they're not. Who knows? Moving on. Rob Van Dam defeated Goldust in just a singles match after 11 minutes. Taz and Spike Dudley defeated Booker T and Test in a tag team match for the WWF Tag Team Championship. I like how that's singular, right? There was one tag team championship. Even though we have split brands, I'm still of the belief of having one tag team championship that floats between brands, whoever the champions are. To me, that's a much, much better, way to up the value of a belt immediately is getting rid of duplicates. It's pretty simple. Okay, William Regal defeated Edge in a brass knuckles on a pole match for the WWF Intercontinental Championship in 10 minutes and 22 seconds. Oh, I love William Regal. The Rock defeated The Undertaker in just a normal singles match in 17 minutes and 25 seconds. And Kurt Angle defeated Triple H to determine the number one contender to the undisputed WWF Championship at WrestleMania 18 with Stephanie McMahon as the special guest referee. So that ended in 14 minutes and 39 seconds. I believe that was the WrestleMania where it was Triple H versus Chris Jericho. So Chris Jericho did defeat Stone Cold Steve Austin in the main event for the undisputed WWF Championship in 21 minutes and 33 seconds. So, yeah, I believe it was. It was Triple H versus Chris Jericho in the main event of WrestleMania 18. And I forget how Kurt Angle ended up losing his number one contendership. I can't remember. But Triple H ended up, obviously, main eventing. And I know that he was also going to try to pedigree his own wife, who screwed him at the pay-per-view. And I think her top fell off at one point during a SmackDown. I think that's like the time frame. My teenage years are bringing back those memories. But Triple H did end up pedigreeing Stephanie, I believe that happened in that match. Okay. So that's really the lay of the land at the time, guys, in 2002, February of 2002. It was still got its big names on there that are about to retire, right? The Rock would only stay there another year before officially retiring in 2004 at WrestleMania 20 with Mick Foley. And then, of course, Stone Cold Steve Austin would have his final match in March of 2003 in Seattle, Washington at WrestleMania 19. So we are really, you know, at the very tail end of the Attitude Era, and this is really where the Ruthless Aggression Era began, is in 2002. So it was that kind of crossover time period, very transitional time, and the time when Austin was just about to walk out because of the whole King of the Ring deal with Brock Lesnar. So, all right, well, let's just listen to some audio here. Let's listen to the introduction of the NWO that took place at No Way Out, and let's take a listen.
Yeah.
So there we go. The entrance of the NWO. But what's really more interesting is the content of their promo that they cut subsequent to this, because it kind of spat in the face of what Vince brought them in for. And they were portrayed as heels, yet getting cheered out of their, you know, like they were just the homecoming baby faces, like they were the hometown heroes, so to speak. And what did WWE expect? You're bringing in three of the biggest stars in professional wrestling history. You have massive history with Hulk Hogan. No, people know what Scott Hall was, Razor Ramon in WWF. They brought in Kevin Nash, who was Diesel in WWF. There was all three of them had history. They go to the WCW company. They blow it up with the NWO. And then they come back. What do you expect fans to do? It's really a miscalculation that they thought fans were going to boo these three men. Why? Because the fact of the matter is a lot of WWF fans watch WCW. I don't think there was massive loyalty when the company was bought by WWE at WWF, and the WCW fans who were in the arena going, oh, boo, no, we don't want to see these guys. We're WWE all the way. No, the Monday Night Raws are over. I mean, there's no logic for anybody to boo these three men. You won the war. You're bringing in the stars. You know the big stars that they could work with now in WWF. I don't know. But here, so let's take a listen to Hulk Hogan and see what he has to say. Pretty damn interesting.
I mean, we might be a little richer and a little more famous, but I mean, we're not here to kill the WWF. We're here to make it better.
That's a relief.
All we want to do is give the WWF fans exactly what they want. And all we want from you is a chance. But it's up to all you out there and all the boys in the back if we get our chance. That remains to be seen. But I can tell you one thing right now. In all sincerity, there's one man who gave the NWO a chance, and that was Vince McMahon. And right now, I'd like to thank Vince McMahon for the opportunity. And I want to tell you, Vince McMahon, we will not let you down. God bless Vince McMahon. Thank you. And God bless all of you, too. And last of all, God bless America. Thank you for the chance.
Can we give him a chance, JR?
I can't speak for you, huh? I don't buy into one word that we just heard. How corny is that? I mean, that's what we're going to be taking five minutes again. I mean, God bless America. You could give a damn about America. You could care less about the fans that are here. These three guys care about...
So there we go. We got a promo from, well, not just Hogan, but also, I mean, Scott Hall and Kevin Nash did also speak. But Hulk Hogan talking about just give us a chance. Right, just give us a chance, and JR not trusting them, but all the fans were buying into it. Until they mentioned Vince McMahon's name, I mean, it was all positivity, love thrown their way. And it's not surprising when they get to WrestleMania with The Rock, of course, that people booed The Rock and cheered Hulk Hogan. People were already kind of sour on The Rock for going doing a movie, kind of seeing that he could step out of WWF. They felt betrayed. And then you, of course, get Hulk Hogan, who is the homecoming hero and who hasn't been in WWF in how many years. And now he's back. And it's just the love and support. It's the reunion. I mean, I don't understand why it was so hard to see. You know, at the time, maybe during, you know, the storyline, people should have probably realized, hey, listen to the crowd reaction here. I mean, I remember listening to it. People were cheering Hulk Hogan all the way up to WrestleMania. So why is it a surprise when you get to Toronto that people are going to cheer for him again and boo The Rock? The Rock, who is kind of a mainstay. And again, one kind of foot out the door now. He's starting to dip his toe elsewhere. I believe his very first role was in Mummy Returns. So the Scorpion King. So this was certainly, to me, not a surprise that the crowd reaction was the way it was. And it was also nice, one thing here, if you didn't notice, was they called the fans exactly what they are, WWF fans. Do you hear the other stupid phrase? No, I don't. It's so refreshing to hear, and you, the WWF fans. Yes, because that's what I am. I'm not a universe, okay? I am a fan. That's what I am. I'm not a universe. I don't know. It's just something I caught that I absolutely loved. So, okay, so now we get into branching away from this introduction. They, of course, should be, we shouldn't have trusted their word, but that kind of goes with the territory. We all know that what they said wasn't true, that, you know, we shouldn't have given them a chance based on the fact that they attacked The Rock. Hulk Hogan even backed a semi into the ambulance he was being driven into. I think he drove a semi right into the ambulance, and somehow The Rock like survived. I mean, that was a little over the top, but he even beat The Rock in a tag team match, I believe, leading up to WrestleMania. It may have actually been the Monday Night Raw, the go home show to WrestleMania, where The Rock was beaten cleanly in a tag team match against Hulk Hogan. I remember that. The fans cheered when he hit the leg drop. And then hit The Rock actually lost clean. And I'm thinking, oh my God, The Rock never loses clean, especially in Monday Night Raw. I remember that. And The Rock certainly got his revenge at WrestleMania to the fans' dismay, which turned The Rock heel. And The Rock heel is a really good Rock. I mean, we got really good versions of both for The Rock. The Rock can play both, whereas Austin just was always meant to be a babyface. And so that there's a, I guess, a bit of a diversity there from the two top guys in WWE. But The Rock as a heel is always a brilliant Rock, and it was just time to turn him heel at that time. And so obviously we all know what happened, and Goldberg returns in 2004. I know I said earlier 2003. I thought it was 2004. And that led to, it was a one-year contract with Goldberg. And nonetheless, we get the other match that really sprung off of this with the NWO, and that was Scott Hall versus Stone Cold Steve Austin. And I remember thinking to myself at the time, like, why? Stone Cold's a bigger star than The Rock. Hulk Hogan is the biggest star in professional wrestling history, and Stone Cold Steve Austin is the biggest modern era star at the time. Why the hell wouldn't you put these two together? I remember thinking that, like, The Rock always felt like second fiddle to Stone Cold Steve Austin in terms of crowd reaction and popularity. He just did. And I think I'm fairly safe in saying that. As great as The Rock was and as popular as The Rock was, I don't think he ever really got to Stone Cold's level. But it just felt wrong to have The Rock versus Hogan. I'm like, yeah, that's cool, but Austin's here, man. Like, why are we not doing Stone Cold Steve Austin versus Hulk Hogan? How is this not happening? How is this not happening right now? And of course, we get information in the later years, and really in the last few years, from Austin. And he goes on to say that he wasn't in the right headspace, that, you know, he felt maybe his style wouldn't work well with Hulk Hogan, and that maybe Hulk Hogan wouldn't be able to keep up with Austin. And Austin was very, had a very high bar set for the quality of his matches. And that, again, Hulk Hogan maybe not be able to keep up. But I don't see the need for that. I mean, we all know the limitations of Hulk Hogan. Even in 2002, and even in his prime, which was, I would say, late 90s, mid-90s even, that he was never super agile. That was never his thing. He's a larger-than-life character that can do minimal wrestling moves in the ring. That was very contagious, great wrestling voice, super popular, could cut promos that would just excite the crowd, had a gimmick that just clicked perfectly, a big body guy, larger than life, but inside the ring from a actual wrestling quality perspective. Yeah, I mean, not exactly your quote five-star match of 2020/2021. I mean, how we would define a match now, would Hulk Hogan would get a, you know, 1 out of 5 in terms of match quality. It's just, wrestling has evolved. Although I'm still of the belief wrestling quality comes second to promos and character, but maybe I'm in the minority there. So we get Scott Hall versus Stone Cold Steve Austin at WrestleMania, and it just felt wrong. I remember watching the match. I'm like, Austin feels like he's in a secondary match. What the hell is going on? And yes, Kevin Nash got himself involved. Kevin Nash ended up taking a stunner. Scott Hall ended up taking like 3 stunners, I think. And that infamous stunner that Austin gave Scott Hall, where he like jumped 6 feet in the air, fell on his back. There's so many memes and things that have been done with that stunner. It's pretty funny. If you guys have seen that match, you know what I'm talking about. And that really was it. He celebrated with some beer, and that was that. And, of course, we all know what happened with Rock and Hogan that night. But after that, Stone Cold ended up actually leaving that next night. He actually was a no-show for the Raw. People forget that, that he was a no-show for the Raw after WrestleMania 18. And he told Vince he just chalked it up to being burned out. And so people forget that, yeah, the infamous walkout in Atlanta, Georgia, for a King of the Ring qualifier match between Stone Cold and Brock Lesnar is the match he walked out on, and the night he walked out. I believe he was replaced by Bubba Ray Dudley. I don't know why I remember that. But there was that. There was this walkout that was really less known, you know, about right after WrestleMania 18 here, that obviously was just a symptom of a much larger problem that would culminate once again, as we all know, with the infamous walkout. So overall, I think the NWO in WWE was, I would say it was not, it didn't live up to what it could have. And I think the timing was number one. The timing of it, and JR has said this in subsequent podcasts in over the last several years too, that he knows the invasion angle could have been much better than what it was, that they didn't have access to the top stars at the time that they wanted them to because of the contracts that they were able to just sit home and collect money from because of the guaranteed money. So why would they work with guaranteed money just coming in the mailbox every week? And I understand that. I do. But at the same time, JR says, you know, he really regrets the way that things went down, that they could have done things better. And I agree. I think the invasion angle was very watered down. It was cool at first, and then ECW joined, and, you know, he started to lose the identity of certain guys, and it just didn't feel very easy to follow. And then Shane gets involved, Stephanie gets involved. Then we have different referees, different announcers. Do we really all need that? I mean, it got really into the weeds and really complicated really quickly. And so many storyline holes that if it happened today, my God, imagine the podcast we'd be creating today. I mean, just the complete lack of logic with things that make no sense. But in the moment, I thought it was okay. I thought it was okay. I do remember a couple of big, big moments with Austin when Vince was trying to convince him to be the old Stone Cold. This is when Austin was giving Vince hugs and making him cookies and doing all the comedy stuff backstage with Kurt Angle. And when he turned first heel at WrestleMania 17, that's when, of course, he was doing all that stuff backstage. And Vince was trying to get him to be the old Stone Cold. He needs the old Stone Cold to be able to face the Alliance, or WCW and ECW in the Invasion pay-per-view. And he comes back to a roaring crowd. I mean, that was the first time they saw the real Stone Cold, the old Stone Cold, back in WWF in many months. And seeing him back, the fans loved it. He cleared the ring with like 10 stunners. I'll never forget that. That was certainly one of the best moments in the Invasion angle. And Austin went on to screw the WWF again, to double down on his heel turn. And, you know, again, I don't think that worked particularly well for him. But look, guys, the NWO in WWE, WWF, you know, grade-wise, I'd give it a C, C+. Timing was bad. The matchups, Austin Hogan would have been a much better marquee. Hogan and Scott Hall and or Kevin Nash would have been a better matchup. Even this is not 2020 booking either, because Hulk Hogan and Rock were really good, surprisingly good. And at the same time, Austin Hogan's a bit bigger name, better headline. It's WrestleMania. You got one chance to do it. And of course, the NWO made their re-debut back in 2014 at WrestleMania 31 with the whole Sting angle, as I mentioned earlier. And Hulk Hogan would go on to be just back into the red and yellow, back to Hulkamania. Fans were losing their minds. I was losing my mind up here in upstate New York when he came back, as he was the, quote, bombshell that Stephanie McMahon said she was going to drop on SmackDown, which I was able to, luckily enough, attend, which was the return of Hulk Hogan. I mean, I think it was at the point where Hulk Hogan came back and the fans were just, it was like, it was a loving embrace. It was a reunion, a reuniting of fans that grew up with Hulkamania, that were in my age group, or maybe a little bit older than I was, but understood what Hulkamania was and what Hulkamania meant. And in the arenas, it was at the time, you may or may not remember, back in 2002 and 2003, when Hogan went back to the red and yellow, but he would get the ovations that would last like 10 minutes, and he wouldn't even say anything. People would just cheer for Hogan and chant, you know, like, Hogan, Hogan, Hogan. And it was amazing. I mean, without even saying anything, and he would put the mic to his lips, and they would, before he even say a word, that he would just continue. It was amazing. I'll never forget that. I actually even saw, personal story, saw Hulk Hogan down in Panama City filming Hogan Knows Best, where I was on spring break at a place called Hammerhead Fred's, I think it was, Panama City Beach. In 2009, I think it was, at Hammerhead Fred's. I was at a foam party, if that tells you anything. But Hogan made an appearance because his daughter was there, which they were just filming, you know, for the show. And she's on stage, and it was a mess, of course, and my memories are very foggy. But the point is, I mean, he's a megastar. He always will be a megastar. And yet it's comical that I'm saying all these things and then I completely trashed him this past week on Monday Night Raw. But it's 2021, okay? 2002, 2003 was a long effing time ago. Hulk Hogan on my screen in 2021 does nothing for me other than just kind of, I go, okay, Hogan's here. I mean, that's what I feel. And then particularly when he's given a script as bad as it was last Monday. And I mean, it kind of makes it even worse. But hey, let me know what you guys thought about the NWO angle in WWE. If you haven't really educated yourself on it or seen it, I'd recommend you see it. It's worth checking out because they were the three biggest stars in WCW at the time. Goldberg, of course, you could argue is there. Sting is there. All eventually made their way to WWE. Everyone seems to always find their way back there, back home, as they always say. And, you know, varying levels of success, but NWO was, you know, C+ in terms of what they could do with them, what they did with them, and could have been a lot better, but it wasn't a bomb. I wouldn't say it was a complete bomb. I will say that. All right. Well, that's all for your wrestling nostalgia tonight, guys. Try to stay off your social media, your toxic social media. That's just a disaster, right? Like go on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram. I double dog dare you. Actually, I don't, because I don't want anybody stressing themselves out or getting agitated. It was starting to agitate me with things being said or being done, and it's toxic as hell right now. It is a poison that will just infest and fester within you. So try to stay off it if you can. But hope you guys enjoyed this. Right after this, I'll be recording the mailbag. So that will also be a show that you can have access to and listen to what other people are saying about the show and questions that they have. So thank you, everybody. I hope you enjoyed the show. And as always, I'll talk to you next time.